top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens.
Good morning. This is the morning news for today, Monday, April 15th, 2024.
Wherever.
I am Richie Ferrell.
Local, region.
In the headlines.
Global, only on Q90.
Former IMF economist and UWP leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine affirms UWP's commitment to develop Dominica and meticulously provide plans, starting with a national economic summit that is not focused on election outcomes. The Eastern Caribbean Green Entrepreneurship Initiatives by the Global Green Growth Institute
wherever
and the OECS
local
announced 27 green entrepreneurs as recipients of interest-free loans totaling $863,403. And passengers plummeted to the ground. 10 people were injured and one person was killed after a cable car cabin collided with a broken pole and burst open near Antalya in southern Turkey on Friday evening. The news brought to you with the very kind compliments of Rudolph Thomas Enterprises. And we'll be right back with more details.
Rudolph Thomas Enterprise in Portsmouth, your suppliers of building materials and hardware products. Over 20 years experience in the business. Rudolph Thomas has lumber and plywood, Portland and tile cement, steel rods, galvanized and fence pipe, and Rudolph Thomas can meet all your wire needs. Galvanized roofing sheets, doors, windows, toilet sets, face basins and bidets. PVC piping, fittings and lattice. Check out Rudolph Thomas for ceramic and vinyl floor and wall tiles, nails, nuts and bolts, paint and painting supplies. And check out their line of electrical and hand tools. And Rudolph Thomas is your one-stop shop for hard-to-find items like fiberglass mat and fiberglass resin and welding rods. Go now to Rudolph Thomas on 1240 Bay Street in Portsmouth.
Welcome back. Former IMF financial economist and United Workers Party leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine affirms his party's ongoing commitment to its mission to develop Dominica in a sustainable manner, which includes meticulous plans that are not focused simply on election outcomes. Dr. Fontaine underscored the importance of timely actions rather than just planning for electoral success. He announced plans for a forthcoming national economic summit on the island aimed at fostering vital discussions on economic revitalization and sustainability and the way forward for the major pillars of Dominica's economy. As part of this initiative, a dinner and award ceremony are scheduled for June 4, 2024, marking the commencement of this first annual endeavor.
We are looking forward to this grand conference or summit. It's called the Dominica Economic Revival Summit that is now scheduled for June 4th to 6th. And that will take place at the Jungle Bay Resorts. We are going to start with a dinner and an awards opening ceremony and awards dinner on the 4th. And then we'll have 2 full days of discussing the economy. And I want to assure the Dominicans that this is not just going to be a talk shop. We are not just going to be talking intellectually or theories. We are going to be talking practical solutions. We are in the phase of planning. We want to be sure that when you, the people of Dominica, place that confidence in us to be your next government, that we are ready to go on day one. So that's part of our forward planning. We're not going to wait until you've elected us to start thinking, to start planning. We are starting the planning early and carefully. We are getting the experts. We are listening to everybody. We are putting those plans together so that from the time we hit, on day one, we'll be able to execute on your behalf. So that's what this is all about. And I hope that you can join us and be a part of this.
Dr. Fontaine also addressed the issue of the national abattoir, expressing his belief that it should have been incorporated into discussions and efforts concerning the livestock sector of agriculture. He highlighted this as yet another example of the DLP administration's failure to effectively manage anything, including a national abattoir.
if I could just move on just a little bit about the abattoir, of course, that should be a part of a good part of the livestock part of what we see. But again, this government has shown just this incredible inability to do anything successfully. I mean, they're not even able to run successfully an abattoir. We've heard of all of the problems that they've gone through, even to the point of wastage and not paying persons and so on, and all of this. And you would think that an abattoir would be at the center of providing a livelihood support for so many people. But the problem is you cannot go into an abattoir without providing support for the farmers. You must have this ability for the farmers to firstly be able to access feed, because if they're not able to access feed, or if the feed is way too expensive, then whatever price you're able to offer them may not be able to offset the high cost of the feed. So the ability to support the farmers where they're able to get those inputs, get the animal feed, you know, be able to get the medicines, and if it is vaccine, whatever it is that they have to do to have a healthy livestock or poultry that they can sell to the abattoir, that has to be done, you know. So that is something that, you know, we certainly have to look at. And I get the impression that this abattoir has been a haphazard type of thing. It was not well thought out, and hence the issues that we're having now. And then, surprise, surprise, another abattoir on the way, you know, and you all know what has happened to the first abattoir. So that is something I believe that we really can do better with.
United Workers Party leader, Dr. Thompson Fong-Tee. The Right Honorable Patricia Scotland, the Commonwealth Secretary General, is spearheading efforts to foster the growth of the digital technology with a specific emphasis on artificial intelligence in the Commonwealth nations. Under her leadership, the Secretariat is actively engaged in accelerating progress across its 56 member states, particularly focusing on the 1.5 billion young people within the Commonwealth. Recognizing the importance of inclusivity, the Secretary General highlights the need to address undeserved groups, including girls and the differently abled within the Commonwealth's population of youth. In line with this vision, the Commonwealth AI Academy has been launched, offering vital tools for upskilling and laying the groundwork for a future where AI is pervasive. In collaboration with Intel, the Academy offers a series of 6 online courses available on the Commonwealth e-learning platform. These courses cover a range of topics, including Introduction to AI for Youth, Introduction to Generative AI, and Introduction to Responsible AI Skills. Additionally, initiatives like Demystifying Intel, RevCloud, and Demystify AI and Open Vino Toolkit aims to equip citizens with practical knowledge and skills. Moreover, the Commonwealth is supporting government officials through the Digital Readiness for Public Sector Leaders program, launched in March 2023. This online self-paced course aims to demystify emerging technologies for senior-level public sector officials across Commonwealth countries. It provides insights into AI's potential applications, current challenges, and strategies for enhancing digital readiness at the national level. United Workers Party member Glenroy Soso-Coffey has drawn attention to the long-standing deficiencies at the National Abattoir. These issues were brought to light in its auditor's report, particularly concerning the lack of accountability and transparency in its operations.
Past times, the abattoir has been plagued with a number of deficiencies outlined by the audit report. And one of the things that the auditors had concern about is the lack of accountability and transparency with respect to how the abattoir has been operated. The abattoir actually operates with a budget of about $1.5 million. But over the years, they have had a trend where the revenue for such operation has been low compared to the expenditures. I don't really like to give figures because, you know, sometimes it appears to be bored. But just to give you an idea as to what I actually took the figures, especially just to give you an idea as to what is happening. Let us just say in the budget of 2017-2018, you heard the revenue that was accrued in at the abattoir was about $322,000. But the expenditure was well over $746,000. $300,000. In 2018, 2019, they generated $315,000, but the expenditure was $1.1 million. Well, they do not have any figures in terms of the expenditure for 2019, 2020, and 2021, but as we see, they operate with a budget of $1.5 million, so we're assuming that they may have spent that money.
Glenroy Coffey further emphasized the financial figures recorded for the National Abattoir from 2019 to 2021, pointing out that this trend indicates a gradual decline in revenue generation on the island over the years.
So in 2019, they made about $558,000. It went down in 2020, $475,000. And in 2021, $253,000. What that shows, the trend shows that there is a decline in terms of revenue generated, but they have a high expenditure. It shows you straight off the bat that the abattoir is Kool-Aid. It is Kool-Aid before it even starts. So that is one point. Notwithstanding all of this, you had discrepancy with the reporting. And that is why the audit team recommend that they must get into putting proper accounting systems or management systems in place so that they can account properly for what is happening.
United Workers Party member Glenroy Soso Coffey. Former Assistant Superintendent of Police Claude Weeks says he is disturbed by the recent confirmation of an incest case which gripped the nation of Antigua on April 9, 2021. This case involved a 51-year-old father who had sexual intercourse with his 11-year-old daughter. This occurred between the period 2014 to 2015. At the time, the daughter informed her school counselor on the matter, after which the counselor contacted the authorities in an attempt to have her removed from the father's home. According to the Daily Observer in St. John's, the now 25-year-old victim told the court on Tuesday, that's last Tuesday, that she was coerced by her father to lie to the authorities by writing a statement to the effect that she fabricated the story in the first place and would like to return to his home. The father reportedly came home drunk and had sexual intercourse with his daughter outside of the house the same day that she returned to his home in June 2014. This young minor became pregnant and had the child within 9 months. The father refused to accept responsibility for the child, even after sexually abusing the victim during the pregnancy. 6 weeks after the baby's birth, the daughter took her father to court for child maintenance. The father pleaded not guilty in the first instance in March 2023, leading all the way to his trial on April 9, 2024, and appeared without legal representation. Things came full circle when attorney Wendell Alexander decided to represent the defendant, that is the father, pro bono. When the defendant's lawyer, Mr. Alexander, told the father that the court would give him a harsher sentence if he was found guilty of the offense, and he therefore pleaded guilty to the charges, reports confirm. The defendant was first arrested in 2015, but the case was never fully brought to the court. In 2021, however, the father was rearrested and officially charged after the victim took legal action against him for child support. Following his guilty plea on April 9, 2024, his bail was revoked and he is now in custody at His Majesty's prison, awaiting sentencing on May 10, 2024. Judge Justice Anne-Marie Smith expressed shock after listening to the case, stating that this was the most appalling case she had ever encountered. Former Assistant Superintendent of Police Claude Weeks cautioned parents to develop a greater sense of morality and respect for family members so as to refrain from engaging in acts of incest with immediate family members. He added that parents should avoid becoming complicit in sexual violations of minors.
I don't think with these kinds of horrific and outrageous and evil acts, we really should be looking at the blame game here. Granted, it has taken place in our sister island of Antigua. I don't think it's anything new around the Caribbean and perhaps in the world, but let us zero in at home. Our children continue to be sexually violated and abused by all kinds of people, starting from the home. In fact, when it happens at the home, in my view, it's a lot more traumatic than anything else. Because really, truly, if in the warmth of your home you are sexually violated or abused Otherwise, surely this can leave psychological scars and retard the total development of that child. There's legislation in Dominica, number 1 of 1998 and number 9 of 2016, the Sexual Amendment Act, which was gazetted in November of 2016, and that has passed. This has really beefed up the legislative framework, the legislation in relation to seeking to mitigating the impact of the predators, if you like. And I want to hasten to say the predators are not generally or specifically only men, because if people are in complicity with men who usually rape our boys and girls, if the wife or the mother, the aunt or the woman, as it were, is giving support to that man, they too are in total complicity of destroying a precious human being.
Former Assistant Superintendent of Police Claude Weeks. The government of Dominica says construction on the new magistrate's court for the Grande Bay constituency is progressing on schedule. Montreal Management Consultant Establishment, MMCE Limited, is the firm overseeing this project. The previous court building for that area was damaged by the passage of Tropical Storm Erica in Dominica in 2015. The magistrate court building is expected to be completed by July 2024. Parliamentary representative of the Grande Bay constituency, Vince Henderson, says upon completion, the structure will assist in allowing for faster processing of cases in that area.
And I'm very happy today to see that construction has actually started in the construction of the magistrate's court in Grande Bay. It will not only serve the village of Grande Bay, but the environs, and of course, Grande Bay being the center of the South, we definitely have a number of people who will benefit from the legal process.
Parliamentary representative of the Grande Bay constituency, Vince Henderson. This is Q95 News. According to a World Bank report, St. Lucia's health facilities are inadequately equipped to cope with the growing burden of health services. In primary care services, a first point of contact for the patient, there is a significant lack of basic technologies and procedures to support patients with non-communicable diseases, forcing them to seek help in other costlier instances, such as hospitals. Recognizing the critical need to address this issue, the government of St. Lucia has initiated a series of reforms in the health sector. A World Bank-financed project is part of this push. The Wellness Center, where Nurse Gabriel works, for example, is one of the health facilities supported by the World Bank's Health Systems Strengthening Project. The project's goal is to improve the accessibility, efficiency, and responsiveness of key health services in St. Lucia. The performance-based financing pilot project was initially implemented in 8 wellness centers across this island. The second phase of the program, now underway, expands the scheme to an additional 9 wellness centers. Following the pilot under the Health System Strengthening Project, the scheme will be scaled nationwide, covering all 34 primary care health facilities in that country. The initiative is expected to improve access to quality health services for hypertension and diabetes at the primary healthcare level. The performance-based pilot program focuses on reforming how primary healthcare is financed and delivered to progress to more equitable and sustainable universal health coverage. The World Bank recently marked Health Day and saw 3 key priorities in the health sector for Caribbean countries going forward. First, continue accelerating progress on universal health coverage, which provides affordable access to quality health care. In the case of St. Lucia, those with non-communicable diseases spend an average of 36% of their household budget on health care every year. However, the numbers vary significantly, with some data suggesting that the poor spend almost 50% of their budget, while the rich spend less than 20%. The picture may be similar in other countries of the region. Universal health coverage will enable equal access to critical healthcare services. Second, strengthen national health information systems. Our research, that is the World Bank's research, has found that in many countries, medical charts are paper-based, unstructured, and reside with the patient, making it difficult to retrieve health information efficiently monitor and evaluate whether best practices are being followed, strengthening national health information systems and strengthening data analytical capacity will be crucial to facilitate data-driven decision-making, improve public health interventions, and enhance healthcare delivery for the region's diverse populations. And thirdly, ensure consistent availability of safe and affordable medicines and supplies. In some countries, critical medicines are not available due to financial and logistical issues. Limitations in human resources in the area of drug policy and pharmaceutical services, procurement and forecasting are also found to be obstacles. These issues can be addressed through supply chain management, international collaboration, capacity strengthening and regulatory reforms, among other things. With concerted efforts from governments, healthcare providers, communities, and international partners, the World Bank says it is time for the Caribbean region to pave the way toward a healthier future. In other news, speaking on the Creole Heartbeat program on the morning of Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, Prime Minister Roosevelt Skerrit has called on Dominicans to seek opportunities with neighboring markets, such as Guadeloupe and Martinique. He said it will increase economic growth for Dominicans and enhance cultural exchanges between the countries.
Martinique and Guadeloupe on their own have a population close to 1 million people. And if you add those who come from France alone during the summertime or during vacation, you can add another million to that. But it's also a major gateway to Europe in terms of access to Europe, especially where tourists are concerned. Because a man comes to Guadeloupe, there's not much he can do Guadeloupe after a couple of days. But he could take a boat ferry and come to Dominica and spend a week.
Prime Minister Roosevelt Skerrit. The Eastern Caribbean Green Entrepreneurship Initiative announced the selection of 27 green entrepreneurs as recipients of interest-free loans, totaling US$863,403 under this initiative's accelerator program. These entrepreneurs were chosen from a competitive pool of applicants to receive funding and support to grow their respective green sustainable enterprises. The initiative, delivered by the Global Green Growth Institute in partnership with the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, with support from the Qatar Fund for Development, aimed to nurture and empower environmentally conscious businesses, fostering sustainable development across the Caribbean region. This is Q95 News. One person has been killed and 10 others injured after a cable car cabin collided with a broken pole and burst open in southern Turkey. Passengers plummeted to the ground following the crash on Friday evening after the supporting pylon collapsed near Antalya. The whole cable car system was immobilized while emergency workers tried to evacuate stranded passengers. An investigation into the accident has been opened, the Justice Ministry said. According to Turkey's Disaster and Emergency Management Agency, a total of 128 passengers were rescued from the 16 cable cars on Friday night in Antalya's Konyaaltı district, but officials said 43 passengers remained stranded by Saturday morning.
What should have been a quick ride from the beach to the top of the hill ended in tragedy. A journey that should have taken minutes in Turkey's tourist town of Antalya cut short when a cable car collided with a broken pylon, sending people plummeting below. A 54-year-old Turkish man died and more than a dozen others were injured, including children, at the Tunik Tepe cable car around 6 p.m. local time. Rescuers rushing to the scene with 500 responders, including air crews and mountaineering teams, helping survivors. Five of the injured were ferried off the mountain by helicopter. Nearly 100 people in 15 cabins were evacuated, with emergency responders also deploying from Istanbul. Antalya's chief public prosecutor's office has launched an investigation into the incident, which happened on the third day of a public holiday in Turkey, marking the end of the holy month of Ramadan. Question now is what exactly happened to lead to this tragic outcome. Milena Veselinovic, Sky News.
That's the morning news. Here's a recap of our headlines. Former IMF economist and UWP leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine affirms UWP's commitment to develop Dominica and meticulous plans, starting with a national economic summit, not focused on election outcomes. The Eastern Caribbean Green Entrepreneurship Initiative by the Global Green Growth Institute and the OECS announced 27 green entrepreneurs as recipients of interest-free loans totaling US$863,403. And passengers plummeted to the ground. 10 people were injured and one person was killed after a cable car cabin collided with a broken pole.
The big stage
and burst open near Antalya in southern Turkey on Friday evening. The news brought to you with the very kind compliments of Rudolph Thomas Enterprises.
Our news, as it happens, when it happens.